Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
And hello, our lovely audience. Your favorite three amigos and the three best friends that anybody can have are back with another episode of Mediocrity. Look at you, you're already laughing, Atterbury and Miggert. Come on now, you love this.
I love it, and I just love watching you do your intros, really. That's the part that makes me the happiest. And I'm so sad that our audience can't see it.
Maybe we'll have to film it one day, just like this triple screen of us.
Yeah, there's just so much gesticulation, and you talk all the way around the room as though you're speaking to the audience that is there in your room.
That's how I get into it.
I love it. I think it's method acting.
It would be nice, because then they could see the peak of the show.
Yeah, it's true. It starts really well for about 3 seconds and then just nosedives into the mountain.
Just careens out of control for the remaining hour.
well, we are Mediocrity, where the show is just okay. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Go find us under the Multimedia Men podcast. Subscribe, please, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Multimedia Men. It's a lot of fun. I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics, and I'm always joined by Jeremy Miggert. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man?
How's it going in your world?
Oh, it's good. Just keeping busy.
Just keeping busy?
Yep.
Sweet deal. Did you do anything fun for the Easter weekend?
No, man. Just hung out, played lots of Mass Effect. It was great.
Has there been, like, a really fun comic book that has an Easter-themed, like, story that you can think of?
Not one that I know of.
Well, there should be one. I don't know. But
it's because it's too much work to draw 20 pages of Wolverine running around looking for Easter eggs.
Oh, but that would be awesome. He could, like, slash the Easter bunny and then say, there is no Easter bunny over there. That's just a guy in a suit. Atterbury doesn't know what that's from. Just make that.
Nah, I hate Kevin Smith movies.
Oh, my God. So now I have to introduce Jonathan Atterbury as somebody who hates Kevin Smith movies.
I love Kevin Smith movies. What the fuck are you talking
about?
Thank
God.
Calm down. Jesus.
You scared me for a second. What's going on? Well, I never know with you, because you don't like AC/DC. You don't like
Bill
Murray.
I love AC/DC. What are you talking about? I like you're just making stuff up now.
Wait.
Like, you don't like AC/DC, you're a terrorist, you're...
Well, no, but it's true. You don't like Bill Murray or The Doors, though, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
But that's because both of those two things are massively fucking overrated.
Especially The Doors.
Especially The Doors.
Oh, y'all are crazy. I don't agree with you. But it is nice to see you, Jonathan Atterbury. You look clean shaven and well coiffed. And what's the deal with that? You decided to shave, and have you been posting? Go ahead, talk to me.
I don't. There's really no rhyme or reason to what I do with my facial hair. Just kind of what I feel like doing that specific day.
All right.
So that's this specific day I felt like shaving, so that's what I did.
So how's the book coming along, and when are we going to see more nude pictures of you on Instagram?
Every day with the pictures on Instagram. But with the book's coming along really well, actually. I just officially, a couple days ago, began putting pen to paper, and I've almost got the first chapter knocked out, so it's coming along.
Well, good deal. New American Fitness. The good Indeed. Stuff. It's the good stuff. So let's get to. We have a cool show. We're going to talk about like James Bond later, and we're going to talk about vampire movies. But now we want to talk about something like that might have happened this week. I don't think anything big happened this past weekend or this past week. Something might have happened. Did anything happen that was worth talking about?
Nothing really.
Nothing?
I think there was like a sci-fi convention or something.
A sci-fi convention? Jeremy, can you help us out?
It might have been Star Wars related.
Oh, that's right. Star Wars Celebration. It's the time of Star Wars now. It's been a year and a half since Force Awakens, and then we got The Last Jedi coming out in December, and now it's Star Wars Day, Star Wars Celebration, and it happened. And we got a new trailer and poster for The Last Jedi, the upcoming Star Wars movie, and we are so excited because we all love Star Wars here. I would imagine, well, I have to say that Jeremy and Jonathan love Star Wars more than I do because they know way more about it than I do. But
well, it's because we actually watch the movies.
Yeah. And play the games. And read the books.
Yeah, and the comics. And
that's true. So let's first talk about the first day, the 40th anniversary or the 40 years anniversary celebration, where they had all the actors out, or most of the actors out. It was cool to see them. And George Lucas and Hayden Christensen was out. It was so exciting to see all of them again. What do you think?
That there were actors there?
No, like that they got to talk about it finally, because it's been a long time since we've seen them or George Lucas really talk about Star Wars like that in a long time. And it was cool to see his side of it. And, you know, if you watched this, George Lucas said on this panel, because, you know, they brought up the prequels, of course, and, you know, I fucking hate the prequels, along with a lot of other people. But he said, like, I shouldn't say this now, and I just shouldn't say it, but the movies were for 12-year-olds. And he's like, when you have that and you look at that, it works perfectly. And I was like, that's a good idea. And when you get those many Star Wars fans in a room, I mean, it's just magical, I think. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe you look at it in a different light. You know, what did you think about that?
Oh, well, I think the prequels have things about them that are terrible and things about them that are wonderful. All in all, I do watch them pretty regularly. It just depends on what mood I'm in as to which Star Wars movie I will watch.
Now, Jeremy, you said you watched one of the prequels recently, right?
No, I was just trying to get you to come over and watch it.
Oh, we need to do that though. I need to come over to Jeremy's house and watch the prequels with you.
You're the one that said no.
I don't know if I can do it. It was so painful. But I need to do it. We need to do a marathon. That would be fun. And do like food and drinks and watch them, just so we can see how they've held up. And that could be a podcast. That would be fun.
Well, I'll say it this way. The Phantom Menace is every bit as good as Monster Squad.
Now, that's just not true, sir.
I like the pause of how long that took for to sink in.
I had to contemplate that.
I thought he
that.
Was having a stroke for a second
I had
there.
To contemplate.
He was actually doing math in his head. It was great.
I really was. I just, like, completely took me off guard. I was like, where is he coming from? What is this? And I was going through it. It's like, no, that's not true. So we got to. It was cool to see Billy Dee Williams and Peter Mayhew, Ian McDiarmid and Harrison Ford. I like the jokes about him actually flying planes in real life, which was great. And then they did a really special tribute to Carrie Fisher, which was invoked tears in me. I don't know about you guys. Did you guys?
That was a great tribute.
I've watched that video package a few times, man. Every time you just kind of choke up. I don't know. I did, at least. What about you?
I didn't weep, if that's what you're asking, but
why?
I got more emotional at hearing Luke's voice in the trailer.
Yes, we'll definitely get to that. And then after the tribute on the first day, the curtains rose and we saw John Williams conducting his orchestra and playing Star Wars music, which was so cool. I mean, I think that was a good first day. I mean, they didn't announce. I mean, we on a previous podcast, I think we talked about what we thought was going to happen on that day. None of it came true. We didn't get new Blu-ray releases or the alternative content.
By a previous podcast, you mean the very last one we did.
That's true, the very last one we did.
The very last one. And so we were all excited, like, okay, tomorrow we're going to find out what this big announcement's going to be on Good Morning America. And it was a complete and utter disappointment.
It was a charity donation, give us money event.
So it's one of those things where I think it's Omaze, right, that's holding this contest. And yes. It's after school funding, something along those lines, which is a great cause, don't get me wrong. But it's just the only time you get anything is if you donate extremely large amount of money, then that kind of guarantees you like a T-shirt or some other shit. And then you have the chance, you know, the one in a million winning the lottery chance of being able to actually go do these fun Star Wars things. So not quite the exciting news that we were all hoping for.
That is very true. It was like upsetting. It was just like all this build and hype. Oh my God, what are they going to? Are they going to give us the Blu-rays and the all altered version? Are they going to come to our house? No, give us money. Fuck you.
Well, I mean, I made an entry for each of you guys in case you win. But if you hate it, I mean, I guess I can just get my money back.
Oh, well, thank you.
Lovely,
Jeremy. That is very nice.
No, I think it's a great cause, and it is a great cause, but it just was, you know, like Brian said, I was really hoping that we were going to get the news of a Blu-ray release or something like that, but we did, we were talking about maybe we'd get some more info on Star Wars Disneyland, and we did get some more info on that. Did you guys catch that?
I'm just kidding, I didn't actually do that.
I figured.
Well, tell us a little about this Star, because Disney's opening up a big Star Wars theme park, and we're all excited about it. It's going to be crazy. What did they tell us about it?
Well, it's not a Star Wars theme park. It's a Star Wars land within Disneyland.
That's right.
So it's not going to be like you have to buy a ticket just to get to the Star Wars theme park, but it'll be a region within Disneyland. So anyways, what they were saying is that the quote-unquote, you know, planet that you're going to be on when you're visiting this area of Disneyland is going to be a totally new area. It's not going to be like Hoth or Endor or Tatooine or anything like that. They are creating a story and land just for this area in Disneyland. And they kind of spoke very vaguely about what you're going to be experiencing. And they even gave you like a 1 second clip of being in the Millennium Falcon. And looks kind of like Star Tours, something along those lines, kind of a motion ride within the Millennium Falcon. So we're going to see how that develops, but it's exciting.
That would be really cool. I want to go. I haven't been to any of that in so long. I'm just into Star Wars right now. I want to get into it all. I want to dress up as a stormtrooper and go.
Well, I don't think they'll let you do that. The Disneyland actually won't let people dress up as the Disney characters when they're coming into the park, because then you can have creepers, you know, pretending to be Mulan or whatever, and
plus, you're too short for a stormtrooper.
Damn it. They won't know I'll get stilts.
But they were saying that what their goal is with this is to really suspend the reality. So when you walk into this area of Star Wars land, you feel like you are in a Star Wars movie.
Well, I'm excited. Do you two plan on doing this at any time?
I have a season pass, man. So the answer is all day long, every day, until I die.
Absolutely.
True hardcore fans here. Me, I'm just like, once and there we'll go. We'll see.
Yeah.
One and done. Well, I'm glad you two want to do that. Did they talk about Rebels or at all? The Rebels show? I'm trying to remember.
I think they announced that season 4 will be the last season.
Okay. All right, the season 4 will be the last season. That's fine. And also, I think we have to talk about, since we love Star Wars and video games, Knights of the Old Republic 2. No, wait, not 2. Damn it. Mediocrity, where the show is just okay. No, they announced the new game, right?
They announced
talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2?
That's what I meant, Battlefront 2. Damn it.
Well, that announcement was made a while ago, but they gave us a little trailer.
Yes, yes. Supposedly they gave more information, like how it's different gameplay and how the graphics look awesome.
Well, we didn't actually see any in-game footage, or the stuff that they did show was, you know, highly... They said it's in-game engine, meaning it's the same engine ran on the best computer known to man at this point in time.
Yeah.
But so, you know, they say we're going to have a single-player campaign and some... Looks like they're hinting at more space battles. You're going to be able to use characters from across all trilogy timelines. So we got to see little Darth Maul fighting Yoda. We got to see a little bit of Rey, Kylo Ren, stuff like that. So it looks good. But as Jeremy pointed out when I told him that the trailer looks good, he said, so did the trailer for Battlefront 1. And couldn't be more true, because that one looked like it was going to be great. And as soon as we turned it on, we were like, yes. And then about 10 minutes later, we were like, meow.
but if they're doing the one story campaign mode, it seems like they listen to fans a little bit, at least.
Well, it's all about the. It's not just about that, because
there are a lot of things they need to do better.
Because they killed it with the graphics and the sound design. So the way it looked and the way it sounded was perfect.
Oh, like the environments were just fantastic. Like when you're running around, like in Bespin, like in your indoors, like in Cloud City, I mean, everything just looks perfect. The inside of the Death Star level, oh, so good.
Yeah. But
unfortunately, a lot of the pluses to the game kind of stop at the graphics.
Ah, that sucks. Well, hopefully the gameplay will be better.
But you should go download it.
I should go download it just to look at it.
It's like super cheap right now. I think it was like $15 or whatever when I looked last.
Okay, it'll happen. All right, so we got video games, and then we got Last Jedi stuff. I can't wait. Let's talk about that poster first. The poster of The Last Jedi. What do you think of it? What does it remind you of? What do you think it's trying to tell us?
Well, it reminds me of the poster for A New Hope.
Just because the Luke Skywalker holding the lightsaber in the air and it's shining.
Yeah, and the lightsaber kind of dividing the frame in half. It's very similar.
Yeah, it's got a great old school Ralph McQuarrie vibe to it.
Yeah. There's a lot of hidden messages in there. It's kind of, you know, turning from a blue lightsaber to a red lightsaber. Indicating that there's going to be some struggling, of course, like there is in every fucking Star. That's what we know blows me away. People are like, oh my gosh, there's going to be some struggle between light and dark in this movie. And I'm like, you mean every fucking Star Wars movie ever? Because that struggle is omnipresent within the series.
I will be amazed if Rey does not lose a hand or an arm in this movie.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's coming. Someone's going to lose an arm.
So
it's got to happen.
So with the poster, it looks like her lightsaber is blue, and then as it gets further up the poster, it turns red. And then we see Mark.
And further past the poster, it's purple, but they actually cut that off.
Oh. They didn't want you to know it's Mace Windu.
Mace Windu, I swear to God.
Rey is Mace Windu the whole time.
I would be. Inside every woman is Sam Jackson, just bursting to come out. Nubian God. John doesn't know what that is either. But I'm cracking myself up right now. I just miss
I'm
you
glad
guys.
Someone's enjoying it.
Like Star Wars. And so we have Kylo Ren, we have Luke Skywalker, and we have Rey on the poster. Those are like the three people on this poster. So I guess those three are like the big, big, big people of the movie, at least what the poster trying to say. But it looks awesome. It's like, because I have a beef with the most movie posters these days where it's just really just a photograph of the actor and the title. It sucks. But these are
actually... And they cram like 15 people on the poster, and there's like light sources are different for everybody. There's no clear perspective for the picture. It's just kind of like a overly art-directed just kind of mess of a poster for most of them. This one's great.
Yeah, it looks really good. It's one I could see like hanging up and having a frame of, because it definitely looks really cool.
It's art. There's no doubt about that. This poster is artwork. And it, like, I shared it on our Twitter account, actually, like the moment it came out.
Oh, well, nice. Nice. I like that you did that. Well, where can they follow us on Twitter?
I forget what our Twitter handle is.
Just three dudes.
Just three dudes, yep.
MediaOcrity or _Ocrity, find us. And Multimedia Men on iTunes, that's where we are, subscribe. So that's the poster. Let's move to this trailer, because this trailer was a teaser of a trailer. We don't get much, but we get so much.
It wasn't
at the
a
same
teaser.
Time.
It was a legit trailer.
No, that was a teaser trailer. That was a teaser. It was like little segments going in and out.
Teaser is something that doesn't actually show you really anything. It might be a background. You might just see them come on stage and be like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is happening. This was actually like you're seeing footage and real stuff from the movie.
More of a teaser. In this day and age, more of a teaser. We'll get a full trailer. This was a teaser.
To me, this is what a trailer should be. Because, you know, they all the trailers just show way too much stuff. Way too much stuff. Not the, you know, the Force Awakens was not guilty of that. And a number of the other, you know, top Marvel kind of movies haven't done that. But most trailers, by the time you watch the movie, you're like, oh, okay, I've seen the best jokes. I've seen the biggest explosions. I kind of have an idea of what's going to happen already.
Yeah, most trailers have like three acts in the trailer. So by the time you get done, you've seen the whole thing. But Force Awakens is great because it was a J.J. Abrams trailer. So, you know, it's like just like when you got his trailers for Star Trek. You know, they showed two or three cool things. And even if it was a two-minute trailer, you still didn't really know exactly what was going to happen in the movie.
Yeah, and this one was just like that, where it was just basically just completely wet the whistle of everybody watching it, making just added questions going, what's this? What the fuck am I looking at? What's going on in this movie? And it just made everyone really excited to find out the answers to these questions.
Well, let's talk about the trailer. Let's talk about it. First, we see it kind of opens up as the first teaser trailer to The Force Awakens, where you see something and all of a sudden somebody appears on screen that's like out of breath and like scared. So this time it was Rey, and she looks like, you know, she's just out of breath and sweaty, might have been training. As we see, it looks like further into the trailer, it looks like Luke Skywalker is actually training Rey with the lightsaber and all sorts of stuff. And so one thing I have to ask, so there was a shot that looked like there were books in a tree or something like that. Do you know what those were?
I'm guessing those are ancient Jedi manuscripts.
So probably that tells how the Force works and...
Or maybe logging the history of the Jedi. It could be, because there's the big old Jedi symbol, Jedi Order logo on the front of the book. That's what that lightsaber circular thing looking is on the front of that. So it could be the history of the Jedi. It could be some, you know, techniques. Could be whatever it is that they're talking about.
Instructional Force exercises.
Yeah.
Okay.
How to run around with a little green guy on your back and do a flip.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Yoda, you hear Yoda in the background of that trailer a couple times, which was cool. As well as I think you got a back shot of Princess Leia, and I think you vaguely hear her say, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope." It was cool that they added like those little subtle things in there. And then, of course, you get a lot of action sequences. Actually, before we get to the action sequences, we do get to see what we saw kind of in the Force Awakens. Only in the trailer, though, mostly, was where Luke Skywalker's metal hand reached out and touched R2 in, like, a burning place. But it looks like we saw another version of that in this trailer, where it looks like maybe the Jedi Temple was burned down, or maybe that was when, like, a flashback of Kylo Ren and the Knights of Ren burned whatever down, right?
Yeah, that's when Kylo went and fucking burned the whole Jedi Temple and little Jedi school to the ground and took his sister Rey and hit her on a planet.
So you think that you're still thinking that Rey is the daughter of?
I at this point, I am everything but certain that is the case. That both Kylo and Rey are the children of Han and Leia.
Okay, all right, Jeremy, you still think the same?
I agree.
All right. So it was cool to see that shot. I'm glad they added that in. And then also we got to see, I guess it looks like Kylo Ren's mask was destroyed as well.
That was Vader's mask.
No, that was Kylo Ren's mask.
That was Vader's mask. That was the one that, like, the melted Vader mask that Kylo had in his little office or whatever. That was Vader's mask, I believe.
I'm going to have to go back and look, but I could have sworn that was Kylo Ren's mask. because we don't see him
Jeremy,
in the mask.
What do you think?
I thought it was a Kylo Ren mask.
Mm.
Because you see the kind of silver trimming that he has that runs around it. Like that was looked like it was present. It was hard to it was really hard to say though, just because the lighting was dark, but it to me it looked like the silver trim on the mask.
That's what I thought. And then so if it is Kylo Ren's mask, that means did he throw another hissy fit and or did he get punched or what happened? Who knows? But in this teaser trailer, we don't see Kylo Ren with the mask on. We only see him in his normal face, his skin. Which brings us to that little segment of him with his lightsaber, and he looked intense, like he was going to fight either Rey or perhaps Luke. So I don't know. It was a pretty cool scene. And there was another scene, I think, with Rey running really fast and determined with the lightsaber. I'm looking forward to that. And then there's a bunch of action scenes with the ships, and it looked like a new A-Wing. Captain Phasma shows up again. BB-8 and Poe.
Poe's ship destroyed.
Which yeah. I think is cool, because one thing I would like to happen in the next movie is I would actually like to see Poe fly the Millennium Falcon.
That would be awesome. Cool.
I would like to see the Falcon in the hands of a pilot that's awesome.
That would again. Be very cool.
Again. As opposed to just like Rey flying it,
Right.
That would be very cool. I would like to see that. Maybe they'll work that out somehow. Because while Rey's training, the Falcon has to go somewhere. So, and then one of the main characters of the last film was Finn, and the only thing we see him here is like he looks like he's still being healed up. So who knows what his part will be in this one?
His part will be lead vegetable number one.
And then we get to the final part of the trailer, which is the craziest part of the trailer. You see a silhouette of Luke Skywalker, and what does he say? Wait, come on, guys. What does he say?
Well, he says he believes it's time for the Jedi to end.
Wow, that's crazy. So, okay, after him saying that, for the Jedi to end, is that plural, or is that like him? Or do you think he's going to go to the dark side because of that? Like, do you think he's going to change? What?
All right, I got a theory here. I'm going to lay a theory out on you guys.
I'm very surprised if my theory is any different from John's theory.
We have not actually talked
about this.
Mace Windu.
No, this will be the first time Jeremy and I hear our theories. So my theory is that Luke has been spending time with Force Ghost Anakin Skywalker. Anakin Skywalker basically, in his enlightened, once more, good self, after Luke turned him back to the light side, I think the two of them basically realized that the Jedi Order puts a little bit—it's a little too religious, and it puts a little bit too much constraint on the Jedi, Jedi slash people that are following this religion. And so I think what they may have decided, both Anakin, Force Ghost, and Luke Skywalker, is that it may be beneficial to just not make it such a dogmatic practice. Therefore, it's the order of the Jedi that he's saying should be ending, and not necessarily, the use of the Force or anything along those lines.
Okay, so how will they do that?
What do you mean, how will they do that?
Well, how will they show that? Like you just said it, but how will they show that in the film?
Well, that would basically just be a matter of what Luke is teaching Rey. He's like, all right, look, I tried to teach more Jedi. That got all screwed up. It puts too much constraint on the people. So what we're going to do now is focusing on using the Force and letting the Force dictate, nothing really in our choices, but letting it enhance ourself and our sense of well-being. And then, like I said, just making it less dogmatic, really. So it's not a matter of the Jedi, which are just a religion, versus or the Sith, which are just a different religion. But, like they talk about it oftentimes in the Star Wars universe, having the gray Jedi, where it's actually just Jedi who don't necessarily operate within one side or the other. They just do what they feel is right in that moment.
Okay. All right. So now we got to hear Jeremy if that was similar or if he has a completely new theory.
I liked John's thing about the Anakin Skywalker Force Ghost. That makes the most sense if he's going to be in the movie. I was wondering if they're going to go a little bit of the route of Luke Skywalker does not want to train any more Jedi, because typically what you have is a lot of the kind of biggest threats in terms of the dark side end up kind of coming from Jedi, going from the light side to the dark side. Like you have your Anakin Skywalker, you've got Kylo Ren. And so that's two great instances of people that were trained like by Jedi that, you know, whether it's from, you can view from flawed training and did the stuff with Anakin Skywalker happen because the Jedi kind of really kind of blew it overall. And so that kind of made me wonder is like, is the reason he's saying that just kind of a small moment in the movie when he, you know, is he going to initially tell Rey that he doesn't really want to train her because of that? And that's why he's basically on that tiny little island in the middle of nowhere.
Well, okay, so that makes up an interesting point of in the trailer where you hear them say something like, reach in, what do you see? And she says she sees the light in the dark, and it's like, what did she say? Something like, it's much bigger than you can imagine or something like that, meaning like there might be something bigger than what we've seen in previous Star Wars movies in regards to the Force.
Well, one thing they could do it that way, like with John's thing about there being it being you know, more of a gray thing and less dogmatic, because if they want to have any kind of which I don't really care one way or another if they do this, but if they want to have any kind of relationship, romantic storyline for Rey, then they can't do the traditional Jedi Order type of thing anyway, because they're not allowed to have romantic partners or of any kind.
Yeah.
Jedi gotta get down, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right, Brian?
Yo, yeah, no, I think Jedi have to get down. They should. I don't know why they wouldn't.
I think that there's a lot of proof throughout Star Wars history and real world history that when people don't get down, they go crazy.
True. So when he says the last Jedi needs to come to an end, do you think Luke will actually turn to the dark side? Or
no.
And when he says the Jedi needs to end, do you think he's referring to himself, or do you think he's referring to him, Rey, and Kylo, or do you think he's referring to all of them plus maybe other surviving Jedi that are hidden across the galaxy?
I think he's referring to himself. I think, and he's probably also getting a bit of pity party, you know, emo Luke Skywalker in this movie, and she may be kind of the one who has to pull him back from the edge of being, you know, despondent after watching his nephew destroy all the things that he had built.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, he can end the Order, but I mean, in terms of like the Force, it's like he can't cut that off from everyone, so.
All right.
Because you'll always have Force users in the Star Wars universe.
Well, I'm just curious of the Jedi because, you know, supposedly they were all killed off, but, you know, Luke was in hiding, or, you know, people were in hiding, but, you know, maybe tons of others might wake up. And we didn't get anything on Snoke in this trailer either. So I'm
just, you know, my honest belief is that may be Luke in the very beginning of the movie when he's like I said, still kind of emo Luke, and we may see an evolution through the movie where he goes back to be like, all right, fuck this, I'm gonna be a Jedi and I'm gonna kick all the asses once again.
Oh man, we still need to see that.
We do, and I think that there's a damn good chance that may happen.
I mean, I would hope so. I would hope that we would get to see something like that, but you know, I wonder if they'll do kind of a similar thing as to, I mean, I guess they kind of did it with Han Solo, but, you know, where Rey is watching Luke, you know, and then Luke will die to give all of his Force stuff to, you know, Rey, basically.
It's not the Highlander.
The Kirk.
To give all his Force stuff
to. Oh, my gosh. To actually watch
that's
these
not movies. How the Force works.
Oh, golly.
Come on. Do we have to get technical here?
Yes.
Yes, when you're that far off, we do.
Well, I mean, I guess when Obi-Wan died in the first film, I mean, I guess he said he could become powerful than he than anybody could imagine. Is that true? Or do you think that while he was alive, Luke couldn't? I don't know. I just feel like when Obi-Wan died, Luke became more powerful.
No.
No.
That's not what happened at all.
Luke was the same power level, just still untrained. He just had Obi-Wan.
That Darth Vader didn't get to murder him right there on the spot because Obi-Wan distracted him.
Yep.
That's what happened there.
I don't know, fellas. I've seen Star Wars once or twice.
We know. Trust us. We're experts.
We're experts. All right. So,
Sith Lords are our specialty.
Sith Lords are your specialty. So, in closing of our Star Wars segment, What do you hope to see? What did you bring away from the first trailer and the poster?
Man, like I said, I think it was a great trailer. It didn't tell too much. It gave just a few questions. It really just made you hungry to see the movie. And what I'm really hoping to see is that we really get a lot of Luke Skywalker in this movie. That's what I'm hoping for more than anything is and also I want to see Luke fucking blast up some bad guys. I really need to see that. I need to see Grandmaster Jedi Supreme ass kicker Luke Skywalker just kicking major bad guy butt.
Bad guy butt.
I want to see him just destroy a bunch of stormtroopers.
Yep, absolutely. So that's what I want to see in this next movie. Everything else I'm open for, just whatever Rian Johnson's going to give us.
Yeah, I would like a kind of a bit of information about what's the difference between the Knights of Ren and the Sith. I'd like a little bit of that.
Yeah, definitely some information there on and Snoke as well. And I will be really happy when they confirm my theory about Rey and who her parents are and all of that. And I'm sure we're going to get all of that.
Okay.
Yeah, we should.
All right. All right. I hope for the best. And it looks like we'll be getting some flashbacks this movie. So I hope to see more of Kylo and how he became, why he became, and where he became. So I'm excited. But that's
fine.
Yeah. So we'll be updating you as more Star Wars news comes out. And again, you can subscribe and follow us on iTunes and under the Multimedia Men. We are Mediocrity. But let's move on. We were deciding to come up with topics at some point, and we came up with James Bond, and we didn't know if we talked about James Bond before. Supposedly we have, but not in like a big sense, I don't think. At least I couldn't figure it out. But let's.
I don't remember talking about it to this extent. I think we've grazed the topic, as of course we have, but. We don't have people listening anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
nobody listens. No, nobody listens to our our podcast. Not true. We have some good, fantastic, well-been listeners. But yeah, James Bond. Would you say that? I mean, nothing's as big as Star Wars, but maybe close to that might be Bond films. I mean, certainly there's not like a hardcore fan base like that goes out, but Bond,
no.
People show up for Bond.
I don't think it's even remotely in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Really?
Really?
Do you know what the best-selling Bond movie of all time is in the theater? What the biggest box office for any Bond? I'd be interested to see the numbers compared to Star Wars or Harry Potter or, The Hunger Games or any of those really big AAA movies.
Well, I believe that Skyfall was the biggest box office gross, and that was, I think, over $1 billion, like $1.1 billion.
Oh, I was just going to say, and where does that rank compared to, like, Star Wars and stuff like that?
Well, I don't think anything beats Force Awakens, really, but $1.1 billion is up there. Spectre, I think, made...
No doubt.
Ton of money, but but there's been like 100 Bond films, and then there's been.
It's certainly the longest running series, I think, ever, right?
Yes, as far as films, yes. And we've had tons of different Bond actors. We've had Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig, and David Niven. But who, when you think of Bond, who do you think of? Who do you, who's James Bond, and who do you go to actor-wise?
Connery.
Connery?
Connery is always Bond to me.
What about Jeremy?
It's probably a split. It's probably Connery or Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I would go with that. Like, I really like Daniel Craig. But Pierce Brosnan, I think, I mean, because GoldenEye came out in 1995. I was about 13 or 14 years old. And I just remember how much I love that movie. Like, Pierce Brosnan is awesome. And that kind of revitalized the series in such a way.
Oh, no doubt. GoldenEye was huge, you know, between just all the cultural significance that it had. That was just such a big movie.
Right, right. And it was, it was just a really cool, they just did a really good job with it, I think. I think I just, growing up, I think I just, you know, just looked up to Pierce Brosnan. And he went on to do several of them, and then they kind of reinvented it again with Daniel Craig as, you know, because before Pierce Brosnan, the movies were making anywhere between, oh, let's say like 40 to 50 million to 150 or 200 million. But when Pierce Brosnan did GoldenEye, that made over 350 million. And then when Daniel Craig came on, that made 600 million, and it just went up from there. You know, box office wise.
Right.
So, and I think, you know, in earlier films, you know, the movies are so much fun, but they're also really campy, more degrading to women than what you're really used to in this day and age. But then they became, you know, I mean, Pierce Brosnan, License or GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies were fun, but then The World Is Not Enough and Die Another Day just became kind of silly and hokey as well. But
they got so bad.
Yeah. And then the Daniel Craig ones really knocked it out of the park. And kind of like, you know, we got to see Bond just kind of like just get beat up a lot. He wasn't like the smooth, suave guy that you've seen a lot. He just got his ass kicked a lot.
True. And he was much more raw and, you know, and visceral. But at the same time, I'd say with the Daniel Craig Bond movies, we're only dealing with like a 50% success rate with those.
I agree with that.
I think Casino Royale was the high point, and it was just fucking perfect. And Skyfall was really good too, but I think Spectre and Quantum of Solace were just completely forgettable.
See, I liked Quantum of Solace a lot. It wasn't, it's my number three. Like, I, Skyfall, Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Spectre. I hated Spectre. Like, coming off,
I did too.
Skyfall, like 5 stars out of 5. Spectre to like a half a star.
Yeah, Spectre was garbage. That movie just made me so angry.
Which was so weird because it was the same writers, same directors, and everything. I don't know how or why they missed the mark that much. I think I know why, because they just like made everything a secret and like, oh, it's actually, you know, it's actually, what's his name? The bad guy.
Blomfield?
Yes, and like, just show us that in the beginning. Like, who cares if you're waiting till the very end?
Well, on top of that, it just, there was no significance to that being the bad guy. It just doesn't even matter. Like, when you saw that, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, God.
Plus, in all those movies, it's like you have the secret organization, which is actually being controlled by another secret organization, which is then, you know, it's like you go through the movies and there's like three, like, giant world, you know, conspiracy secret organizations, and it's like, okay, come on, dudes. It's like, you got to have something else for me here.
I agree. It's, I think they need to redo their storytelling. And like, it seems like almost all the time since the mid-2000s that James Bond movies have been, they're very hard to make, and like, people are suing and everything. That's why we have not, there hasn't been announced a new one, because the Bond franchise is under, not under investigation, but like, people are suing over the rights and characters again. So who knows when we'll see it. And of course,
plus with these new four, like, I feel like they they never really figure out like what kind of Bond movie they want to make. It's like they started out with Casino Royale, and it was like more serious and edgy, like less of the humor and the gadgets and everything else. But then by the time you get to Spectre, it's like they're back to making, you know, old school Bond movies with lots of jokes and lots of gadgets and everything else.
Which is sad, because I think what was cool about Casino Royale or even Skyfall was like that simplicity of it. I mean, in Skyfall, you have like the old school car, but then like the last crazy scene is like him in like a rundown house, you know, setting off booby traps. You know, that was really cool. So yeah,
oh, yeah.
I totally agree with that, Jeremy. I want them to get back to their roots again, you know, and not like be campy again, you know, like. I don't think that humor works anymore, at least with this. I could be wrong. Maybe some people like it, but...
I agree. They swung too far down that lane. They needed to get... You know, I think Skyfall was a really nice balance between the feel of the new Bond and the kind... just a touch of the campiness and feel of the old Bond. And it worked. That balance was perfect for me. But, you know, then when they did Spectre, it was just way too much in the other direction.
Yeah. It was very interesting. It's very, very interesting. So yeah. What are some of your favorite Bond movies?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. Both you and Jeremy, of course.
Well, I think GoldenEye is going to rank for all of us. GoldenEye was a fantastically fun movie and just exciting and just a really high point in the Bond series. And like we also said, Casino Royale and Skyfall are fantastic, but I also gotta admit that I'm a sucker for all the like the Roger Moore era Bond films too, like Moonraker and stuff like that. Those are just the Roger Moore Bond movies are so corny and so campy, but they're also really fun in their own kind of unique way.
Yeah, Roger Moore, I'd have to say like Octopussy or Spy Who Loved Me are so much fun.
Oh yeah, so much fun. And, you know, even the Connery movies like, you know, Goldfinger and all those movies that he did were also really cool and really fun in a very unique way. They're kind of hard to watch. You have to be in a very specific mood to watch those Connery Bond movies. but they're wonderful for what they are.
Wow. Wow. What about you, Jeremy? What are your go-to Bond movies or ones that you hate?
Man, the go-to ones for me, probably GoldenEye and then Casino Royale are probably my favorites.
The new Casino Royale, not the original one from 1967.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I like it.
What about Bond theme songs? What's your favorite Bond song?
Ooh. Hmm.
I would have to say, for some, I mean, I might get yelled at for this, but I really like the one with, what's his name? Jack White. Die Another.
The one for, that was the one from Quantum of Solace, right?
Quantum of Solace.
Right. I really like that song.
Okay.
Oh, and Skyfall from Adele.
It was good right up until Jack White decided he needed to sing on it.
Yeah.
He has to.
And then it ruined it.
Adele Skyfall is fantastic. I still like listening to that.
That's pretty decent. I think my favorite by far is You Know My Name by Chris Cornell for Casino Royale. That song is just fire, man. As soon as I heard that for the first time, it just like blew my mind completely and got me so amped up and ready for that movie. And it still does. Every time I hear that song, I'm like, I need to fucking watch James Bond kill some people.
What about, didn't Madonna do one? Tomorrow Never Dies? Didn't she do that one?
I don't recall, to be honest.
I know she was in it, but I'm pretty sure she did that. What about you, Jeremy? Which ones do you like?
Oh, my favorite's probably the Tina Turner GoldenEye.
Ah, that's right on. That is a good one.
I tend to prefer Bond theme songs sung by women.
They're all mostly sung by women, minus what, Chris Cornell and maybe Jack White, is that right?
And Paul McCartney.
Oh yeah, Paul McCartney, that's right. I totally forgot about that. How could I forget about that?
Yeah, you don't, nobody forgets Paul. Nobody puts Paul in a corner.
What do y'all think about the Bond movie You Only Live Twice from 1967?
That is the one where Bond, Sean Connery Bond, gets killed, supposedly, right?
Yes, and that's that is the one where
his bed, his like little bed, folds up into the wall, and all guys come in and blow him away in his bed, supposedly.
Yeah, that's Blofeld and the head of who's the head of Spectre. Yeah,
I think that's a fun one too.
You know who wrote that movie or who wrote the screenplay?
Seth Rogen.
Road Dahl.
Really, the guy who wrote BFG and Charlie and all
the,
those?
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting little thing there, little piece of information.
Yeah, I had no idea. That's totally an interesting factoid.
Yeah, it's just like, he wrote that? Really? It's like, yeah.
The guy who wrote all the children's books?
Yeah. That is pretty cool. But yeah, no, I like all of them. They're really fun to watch, and they're fun to see how Bond has kind of transitioned over the, I mean, since 1962, you know?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think he's gone with the times and has changed a lot. So where do you want to see, Bond go from here? Because we've seen, or we've heard, and watched, Daniel Craig say that he does not want to do Bond anymore.
Well, he said that he's confirmed recently, I believe, that he's going to be doing the next Bond movie.
Well, because they probably paid him. I mean, for the last movie, he got paid $39 million to do Spectre.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I'm ready for him to go. You can tell he's not into the part anymore, and he's not even trying. At least I feel like in Spectre, he wasn't trying. And so I think, you know, if you don't want to be fucking Bond, then don't be fucking Bond. You know what I mean? Like, give it to somebody who wants the role.
Well,
there are so many actors out there that would give their left nut to be Bond. And I think it's just ridiculous that we've got a guy being paid $40 million to do a movie. And he gets the honor of being fucking James Bond. And he's going to complain about it. That's just, I find that really off-putting. You know, like...
There's a lot of things that go with making Bond. Like, there's like certain films he can't do. There's certain things he can't wear. Like, not like in public, in like real life. Like, it's like a crazy.
But these contract. Are such like ridiculous first world problems. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I can only wear Rolex watches and drive an Aston Martin. Mwah.
But you know,
sorry,
it's not like he paid for that car anyway.
Exactly. He's getting free watches and he gets to be the fucking Heineken guy. And, you know, I can't imagine that his life is actually not awesome.
Well, I mean, no, of course. But then you think about, okay, he's an artist. And I know Jeremy's an artist and you're an artist. If your artwork, you had to do the same thing in and out and like somebody telling you, like a big studio saying like, you have to do this. You can't have any creative input. And you think it's wrong and you don't want to do it, you're tired of doing it, even though you're getting paid a lot to do it. And then in your private life, you still have to abide by certain rules for no reason.
So if you're saying that if I were to be paid hundreds of millions of dollars to write, like, let's say this book that I'm writing is a success and I get to, and then they say, okay, we will pay you hundreds of millions of dollars, give you Aston Martins and Rolex watches and a house in Beverly Hills. All you got to do is keep writing this book series. And I guarantee you that I would not be unhappy with that at all. I would keep making that book series until I fucking died. If I could just be paid that much money and have that much radness associated with it. And if my book series was incredibly popular and every fucking kid, you know, and teenager was idolizing the characters in that, that's pretty rad. And I think that's – when I hear artists that say that they're unhappy with that kind of thing – then I just feel like they've lost touch with reality a little bit.
You know, they're artists. They want to create what they want. They don't want to have a studio exec telling what they can and can't do, and then hearing the same.
Ego running completely out of control, though, because I mean, you know, I get that we all want to be able to create our art, but it's like do you want massive success or not? If you are massively successful, and then you will have constraints on what you can and cannot continue to do. And if you're not massively successful, all you're going to want is success more than anything.
Well, yeah. Plus, it's funny to think about. It's like, you know, he's at a point where he's probably, I mean, we assume like financially, he doesn't really have to do any other movies, right? And so he's, you know, contractually obligated to do this job. But as any, like, actor or artist that takes something, it's like, how many jobs do you think he took to get to that point, which were things that he probably didn't want to do even before then, that didn't pay anywhere near as much, but you still got to do those gigs. Yeah, it's like, to me, this is pretty much the same thing, just on a bigger scale. I mean, you know, you signed the contract.
Yeah, and it's not like he got, you know, signed to be Barney for 20 years. He gets signed to be freaking James Bond.
He did.
It's a pretty cool job.
And it's been over 10 years.
If you're going to do it, you know, even if it doesn't mean something to you, it means something to a lot of other people, so you need to show up.
Yeah, you need to show up, and if you're being paid $40 million, then you better give it your best. Let's be real.
I hope it works out. I really do.
But that's my take. As I want to see, I want to see a young, hungry Bond. I think that Daniel Craig has reached the end of his rope, both how much he cares. And let's face it, he's too old to be a convincing Bond at this point, too. He's reaching that point where I'm like, all right, I'm ready to see a young Bond again. At least, you know, when I say young, I mean a Bond that's, you know, not 50 years old.
Yeah.
Plus, it always cracked me up that his first Bond was supposed to be young Bond starting out. And I'm like, that doesn't look like a young Bond to me.
No, I mean,
that still looks like late 30s, early 40s Bond.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, Pierce Brosnan in circa GoldenEye was the perfect age to start a Bond. Like, give me another Bond right there in that spot at that age, and I'm perfectly happy.
Who would you guys want to be Bond if you could choose someone right now? Who would you pick?
Besides that's Gary a tough Busey? Question.
Yes. Gary Busey, obviously off the table, because it would just be too great.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to go completely unexpected here, and I'm going to say Daniel Radcliffe. I could see it because I believe that he's a really dedicated actor, and I think that he's a bit of a chameleon because, you know, when we watched him in what was that movie he did recently that was pretty interesting?
Swiss Army Man,
yeah, where he was a corpse, obviously. But there's been a few projects he did recently. There was Horns. Something also that he... Yeah, Horns, and there was the most recent one.
The one where he played, like, the undercover cop.
Yeah, like, he was being a skinhead guy. Yeah. So he can be tough, and he can be a little scary when he wants to be. And I think that it could be interesting to see him doing that role.
I think
it would be a complete 180 from what we're getting with Daniel Craig.
That would be cool. That'd be young. I think I'd want to see Idris Elba. Idris Elba.
There's been a lot of talk about, but he's too fucking old to start him. We'd get one or two good Bond movies for his age, and then he's just going to be way too old.
Really?
That's my opinion. I think starting Daniel Radcliffe, he's the perfect age to start doing Bond movies.
Okay.
And you know what I mean? Just get him buffed up a little bit, give him some good martial arts training, and I want to see some fights like we saw from the Russo brothers.
Get him some platform shoes.
Is he really short? I don't really know what his height
is. Yeah, he's short.
Okay, well, maybe that wouldn't really work then.
Well, what about Daniel Kaluuya?
I don't know who that is.
He's the actor in the recent movie Get Out.
Oh, okay, the star of that film who's also in Black Mirror?
Yes.
I don't know. The vibe doesn't really work yet there for me.
James McAvoy?
No. Can't see McAvoy. I can see Tom Hardy being a really cool Bond. But I also don't know if Hardy's quite refined enough to be Bond. I mean, I know Bond's not supposed to be super, super refined, because if we go back to the actual Bond that was created in the books, what we were getting was kind of a guy that was, at his core, very raw and rough, but he would have been brought up in a refined society. So it's kind of like this sheen over this completely jagged edge.
Or what about...
I would like Henry Cavill.
Ah, Henry Cavill.
But he's not British, is he? Yeah, I can see Cavill being really good.
He's British?
Yes, he's British.
He is?
Fuck. And he's already in shape. So...
Okay. What about
Nicholas... Yeah, give it to...
Nicholas Holt.
I don't know who that is either.
The guy who plays Beast in the X-Men movies.
A kid from About a Boy.
Oh, fuck no.
What?
I can't see that at all, man.
You were just looking up British actors and reading names.
I'm just thinking of British actors, just like trying to think of people.
I know. That's what I just said. You're looking at British actors and listing names.
He's a strong dude.
What? Just because he plays Beast doesn't mean he's strong. What the hell are you talking about?
He's young.
He's going to list Michael Fassbender next.
No, I'm going to list Ian McKellen as Bond. Go the
Sir Patrick Stewart.
All right. Well, hopefully the lawsuits will settle and we'll get another Bond movie at some point with or without Daniel Craig. Just we want Bond to keep going because we like Bond.
I don't think Bond is going anywhere.
And as we bridge this gap between Star Wars and Bond, Daniel Craig was in Star Wars Force Awakens. So
briefly.
Very, very briefly. Very, very briefly. All right, let's get to our last topic. I mean, we're going to go over time because we're having too much fun here, but let's talk about vampires. Let's talk about vampire movies. And what they've meant to us and are some of our favorite ones and some of the worst ones and how they differ from one another, because there's tons of vampire movies. There was even a time where there was like just an influx of vampire movies everywhere, kind of like how zombies are now, where there's just zombies everywhere. But now with vampires, what do y'all think about the vampire film cinema realm?
I am a huge fan of vampires.
Why?
I remember some of the first horror movies I ever saw as a kid were vampire movies. I remember watching the original Dracula and lots of those types of, you know, 80s vampire movies, Fright Night, etc. And it just completely captured my imagination. What I love about the vampires is getting that kind of mix of classy, refined, yet also completely dangerous and animal-like, that the kind of the duality of the character.
And there's kind of like a fantastical, magical element to them as well.
Yeah, and they're, you know, like in my mind, a vampire should be both terrifying and sexy at the same time.
All right. Jeremy, what about you?
Man, I love them. I pretty much am good to go for anything of the kind of like classic monster variety of, you know, things like werewolves, vampires, that kind of stuff. So I'm usually down for a good vampire movie.
All right. What type of vampires do you hate in movies?
You know, I don't know if there's really anything I particularly hate. I never really saw any of the Twilight movies, so I don't really. That's probably the only ones I haven't seen, you know, a large portion of.
Yeah, I would have.
I don't know if there's really anything I specifically hate.
Because, I mean, like John said, you know, you have, you know, first thing of vampires, most like, or, you know, you think of Dracula, you know, from the 1930s, Bela Lugosi. And, you know, it's about a guy who just wants to find love, and he can't because of his ailment. But and he's also frightening. I mean, he's also good. But then that has transitioned over the years. I mean, in 1922, we saw Nosferatu, who is still scary. And, you know, we move up to the 60s and 70s and then 80s, where there was a huge thing of vampires, which got into other genres like The Lost Boys. You know, that was kind of like a rock and roll steampunk comedy movie with horror aspects to it. And then there's like the romantic versions of vampires. There's like the hardcore violent ones, the scary ones, the monster ones. And there's even like the high school ones, such as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is an excellent, excellent realm of vampire world. What do you think? What do you like to see?
Well, you know, I agree with Jeremy when he touched on Twilight being perhaps what's not so good in the vampire world. I think, to me, what I can't stand is soft vampires, where it becomes too gushy, because I realize that within Dracula itself, there's a big love story there. And to have the vampires be seductive and stuff like that, it can easily get too mushy and too soft. And I think that that's where it starts to really lose me, is a lot of the Anne Rice stuff for that reason kind of drives me a little nuts. Where I think, you know, some of her stuff in her writing and, you know, the movies that have been made out of those books, it can be cool, but for the most part, it's a little too soft.
A little too soft.
little too soft, a little too much romance, not enough terror. And I think that, because I think that above all, vampires need to be fearsome. They need to be something that is scary.
So,
or at least has the potential to be scary.
What do you think of the 1990s film Interview with a Vampire?
I think there were some good moments and good aspects to it, but it's not my favorite. I don't usually watch it.
No.
No, like I said, it's a little bit too fluffy for my taste. It's a vampire movie that somehow manages to not feel much like a vampire movie.
All right.
I agree with that.
Okay. What about something like 30 Days of Night, which is a comic that turned into a movie?
I thought that was a really fun movie.
Because those are more of kind of like the monster-esque vampires, not your traditional just fangs or something like that.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like the feral vampire idea, you know, the ones that where they're just kind of like these, blood-hungry monsters. That can be really fun to see and watch. I'd much rather see that than Twilight.
Yeah, and conceptually that movie was cool because if you think about the idea of like the scary aspect of vampires is that, you know, if you can survive a certain amount of time in a normal vampire movie, if you can just make it till dawn, you're safe. But in that movie, that, you know, that safety net for that portion of, you know, the kind of lore for vampires, once they remove that, all of a sudden it makes it much scarier whether you're dealing with feral vampires or, you know, even if they weren't feral, it's like the idea that you basically have nowhere to run and can't get away makes it much scarier.
All right. So what do y'all think about Blade?
Love Blade, man.
Love the Blade.
Do you like it?
I think some of those Guillermo del Toro vampires that we saw in Blade 2 were some of the best film vampires ever.
Oh, I agree. So cool. So gross.
So those vampires from Guillermo del Toro have transitioned over to his TV show Strain, or in his book Strain, The Strain. And they're the same type of vampires. But they're really cool. It's a really cool aspect. But I liked seeing, you know, the Blade character is just a really cool, interesting character because he's actually one of them, but he destroys all of his people, basically, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because he has to.
Which he's a half vampire.
Yeah, he's a daywalker. and high school teenager vampire movies are, I think, my favorite genre, like Lost Boys and Fright Night and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and even Salem's Lot. You know, those, because I think I just, you know, you grow up with them and I think you just relate to them more, I think. And I think they've done a good job with all of those, I think, to me. And of course, what about Dusk Till Dawn, which was like a complete, you know, fun movie with vampires in it who were just completely evil vampires, by the way.
I think From Dusk Till Dawn is a fun movie. I've always enjoyed that one.
I agree. I haven't watched it in a long time, so I don't know if it holds up.
I think they've got it on Netflix, so you could probably watch it.
Is it on? I might have to check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Give it a once over. Because, man, a lot of those don't hold up for me. Like Lost Boys, Fright Night, those don't hold up.
Fright Night does not hold up super well anymore, but I still maintain that Lost Boys, I love that movie, and I always enjoy watching Lost Boys.
Me too.
To me, the apex of vampire movies all comes down to Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, I agree. So good.
From 1990.
I mean, that is a perfect movie. The only thing that's weird about that movie is Winona Ryder. Everything else is perfect. We've got, I mean, the score, that's one of the best movie scores of all time, in my opinion. It's so classic. And just the all the practical effects that Coppola gave us, it was just amazing looking. And come on, Gary Oldman as Dracula and Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing. Does it get any more awesome? I don't know. I don't know about that.
I like that. I mean, I had a poster of that growing up. I love that movie. It is a very good movie. They did a good job. It's like it's one of those period piece vampire movies, you know, set.
Well, what's so great about that is we get all these different vampires in one movie. You know, we get smooth, suave Gary Oldman when he's wearing this friggin', you know, old school sunglasses. But we also get creepy old Dracula with the man bun. the dual man bun, and we get the crazy bat Dracula, and then the weird gross one with the drippy mouth at the end.
Yeah.
We get all these different vampires. It's fantastic.
It is good. It is good. I like that. Did y'all ever see Let the Right One In?
Yes, both versions.
Okay. I love that. I love that universe that that's set in. I think that was such a cool, really messed up movie.
Oh, I agree. The original is so good. The American version, not so much.
I agree. Totes agree. And I want to give a shout out to a vampire movie that people might not have heard of, but you should. It's directed by Park Chan-woo, who directed Old Boy and the recent Handmaiden movie. But he also did a vampire movie called Thirst, and it is excellent. If you haven't seen it, look it up. Thirst, great vampire movie. What about Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter? What about the silly ones?
That was fucking a pile of shit, was that movie. That was horrible. I watched it, man. I tried to watch it. I really did. I couldn't do it. It was too bad.
Oh, did you see it, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Didn't like it?
It was okay. It was fun. I mean, I expect them to be silly and terrible going in, so...
Well, one that's a silly one that was recent that is excellent is What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes, that movie was so good.
That is a mockumentary about living in the modern world as we are today as a vampire. As made like a Christopher Guest movie, like Best in Show. And it was excellent. I think there's just so much to explore. And what I like about, you know, going into every different vampire movies, maybe somebody looks at vampires as something different, or maybe, you know, like some of the rules, like garlic doesn't work, or the mirror and the reflection doesn't work, you know, or something else comes into the folklore, which I really love, which I think we got with a movie that came out recently called Only Lovers Left Alive, which starred Tom Hiddleston and what's her name, it was directed by Jim Jarmusch. It's a Jim Jarmusch vampire movie, Tilda Swinton, and it's really cool, and it's it was cool to see how they incorporated all the vampire lore into this kind of romantic horror type of film. It was excellent. It's cool to see all that. If you had access, somebody's going to give you $20 million to make a vampire movie. What type of vampire movie would you make?
I would just give my money to the I forget the guy's name, but the guy that made the Witch.
Oh yeah, Eggers. What's his name? Something Eggers. I'm looking it up right now, but I think his last name was Eggers.
He is making the movie that I want him to make. Yeah. So it's kind of happening already. I don't need to worry about what I would do. He's remaking Nosferatu, and I am 1,000,000% on board with that.
Yeah, Robert Eggers.
Okay.
He directed The Witch, and now, I'm trying to think. It doesn't say according to some sites, but if he's doing that, I absolutely.
Yeah, I read a confirmation from his own, I think it was his Twitter page, that his new projects are he's working on Nosferatu, and he's working on a series that's going to be a dramatization of the life of Rasputin, and I'm also 1,000,000% on board for that.
All right. Cool. What about, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, one movie that I think gets not talked about a whole lot with vampire stuff was the, I can't remember the name of it right now, but the one with John Malkovich.
Oh, Interview with a Vampire.
No, not Interview with a Vampire.
Shadow of a Vampire.
Shadow of the Vampire. And who was the vampire in that one? Was it Willem Dafoe?
I believe so.
Yes, think so.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe, yeah. Yes.
So, John Malkovich and Willem Dafoe, and it was kind of a fictionalized version of the making of the original Nosferatu, and that was a really cool movie, I thought.
Yes, that was a really good movie. I believe that won some awards as well. That was a great movie. Oh, John Malkovich is so good, and Willem Dafoe. Jeremy, what about you? If you had $20 million to make one, what would you do?
I'd probably go find the dudes that made Daybreakers and get me a sequel to Daybreakers.
You know what? We haven't brought that up because I remember seeing that in the theater and I was like, Daybreakers, that was, you know, it wasn't the perfect movie, but it was a damn good movie. And the folklore they brought into that where, with Willem Dafoe in that movie where he was in the sunlight for a few seconds and it turned him back normal was awesome. That was so cool.
Yep, I liked the, you know, I thought it was they tried something a little bit different, and story-wise, I thought it was interesting with the whole thing of vampires being normal as long as they consume blood, but the less they have, you know, they start kind of going feral, going a little bit wilder, kind of turning into the vampires, you know, a little bit more monstery. Thought that was a really cool way for them to try to do something different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because that movie cost $20 million and it grossed $50 million. So it's not exactly the, you know, an awesome, awesome movie. But yeah, they are awesome box office-wise. But yeah, those guys, they directed an awesome zombie movie in Australia called Undead prior to Daybreakers. And after Daybreakers, they directed Ethan Hawke again in Predestination, which was a great sci-fi film. And now both of them are directing the upcoming Saw reboot. So, I don't, they don't have, there's not a plan to do a sequel, but however they should, because there was just a lot of cool stuff in there, you know, because that was, that Daybreakers showed a world where vampires won and took over. So it would be cool to see how that all unfolded, or the war that would be impending on all of that soon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good thing. I would love to see that, because that got good praise from critics and fans alike. So who knows? Maybe it's because they didn't make money, unfortunately.
I gotta say that it just occurred to me that there is a vampire movie that I would like to see made.
Okay.
And I really want to see a horrendously gory, gothic, creepy Castlevania film.
That'd be cool.
Because so, I know that Netflix is doing a Castlevania cartoon that's going to be happening soon, but I want to see a live-action film that is very adult. But it also, it's important that they get the vibe right. You know, you have to have a really good classical soundtrack. You have to get the vibe of the castle and the adventure of it all down.
Yeah, Nintendo's really weird about all that stuff. You know,
Nintendo's run by a bunch of asshats. It's ridiculous.
I totally agree. They made one movie once long ago, and everybody hated it. It's surprising with the success of Lord of the Rings that Zelda's never been made, and a Castlevania movie's never been made, because that would be super cool to see both those films, especially Castlevania with, you know, horror being. I mean, you could make a really cool Castlevania horror movie for $10 to $20 million, and it would make tons of money, I bet.
It would be huge. I think if they did it right, it could be it's such a fantastic lore and world to go actually inside the Castle Dracula and just explore more of that. That's something that we've never really been able to do a whole lot of. The most we ever got of that was in Bram Stoker's Dracula, I think.
Yeah. Jeremy, what do you think?
About Castlevania movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that translates probably to a movie screen better than like a Zelda movie might, but I think that would be fantastic to see a Castlevania movie.
That would be really cool. No, I like that.
Brian, what kind of vampire movie would you make?
I think I would make like a high school-ish, super scary, super funny, kind of like, I would probably make like a Shaun of the Dead type of movie, but with vampires.
Okay.
And with maybe not like the old, in a high school setting.
So Buffy the Vampire Slayer part 2.
Yeah, but you know,
the British version.
Yes, yes. I think that's what I would do. Absolutely.
I mean, now that you mention it, honestly, to have the Shaun of the Dead's dudes, just make a vampire movie, give me some Simon Pegg in it, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That would be awesome. Shaun's back, but now instead of zombies, it's vampires that he has to deal with. That would be great.
Shaun of the Undead?
Shaun of the Undead. Yes, I like it. Well, that was a good episode, guys. That was fun.
That was a long episode,
that
too.
An hour and 20 minutes. We did well.
25 minutes of bonus content.
That is true. If we had, like, a Patreon page, we would charge you for it. But we're not going to do that, because it's going to be free, because we like delivering fun stuff.
You probably wouldn't pay for it anyway. Let's be realistic.
It's not like that money's going to go into making anything better.
Yeah. So, yeah, Star Wars, James Bond, and vampires. This episode, please subscribe and listen to us on iTunes under Multimedia Men. Mediocrity is our name. And we love doing this show for you every week. We will be back next week with more fun and laughs and naked time, hopefully. but it's been fun. We'll see y'all next week. We all love you. Thanks for listening.